in terms of the
Women's locals, did the local have different functions and do different kinds of things than the other locals, or was it pretty similar?
Pretty similar, nothing different, only organizing the unorganized, mm-hmm. and that was the main thing, and then hold a local meeting, you know, and they would present their cases, and then we would try to see to make adjustments, you mm-hmm. know, wherever they
So in that go. Sense, it was like the mixed locals then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there any resistance from the men in the union to having a separate women's local?
Not so much. Mm-hmm. There were some, but not too much, because when that, not so much. No, when she was a bundle maker, she went to bundle maker. And when she was a, when a man was a presser, he went to the presser. She didn't come to the buttonhole.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so the fact that they were only buttonhole makers made it okay. If it was mixed, a woman who was did the felling and buttonhole makers, then they would object.
The girl in the felling department had their own chair lady. The man in the basting department had their chair. They were all different locals.
What local was the girls have in who were felling?
Mine was local 70.
70?
And that was local, and the cutters was 115.
Now, was it called the local 70 women's local, or was it called buttonhole makers?
Buttonhole makers local 170, ACWA.
Oh, and it's just that it happened to be all women rather than...
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the one in Chicago where it was mixed, some were buttonhole makers, some were fellers.
No, not at all.
What about the women's locals in the other cities? As you traveled around, did you have contact with them?
Some, but they were all in one. No women's local.
Oh, was Chicago one of the few that was really stood out as being a...
I only saw that Chicago's had a women's local, and we had a women's local, and... I don't think Rochester had, no. Mm-mm. Rochester, New York. And then later on, now what they have in the South, I don't know. I don't think that they have no
No, I don't think they had. Yeah, I don't think they had too many shops in the South at that point either.
No.
Now, Mamie, one of the other things I wanted to ask you about was in 1924, they set up a women's bureau within the union, and it was discussed at the General Executive Board meeting first in 1924, and then Dorothy Blanca was put in charge of it. Then it kind of disappears.
I didn't know about that.
The women's bureau, because there are a couple of speeches that you made. I'll show you your speeches that I got out of the convention records. It was in 1924 there was the local. Then in 1926, should I read you part of your speech? It was a wonderful speech. This is in 19...
I forget, see the years.
Let's see, Cincinnati. Okay, this is 1926 here. And at that point... Oh, well, let me do it in order for you.
See, I was up in Connecticut, too.
I'll do it in order for you. First, in 1924, there was a resolution passed that a National Women's Bureau be established, whose duty shall be to make a particular study of the woman problem, to devise and use methods suitable for organizing the unorganized, and of developing class consciousness among the organized women, and be it further resolved that a page in the advance be devoted to women's problems and activities in the organization. Then it goes on, and then it says, the committee's recommendation that this matter be referred to the General Executive Board for study and consideration. This was at the convention in Philadelphia. Yeah, in Philadelphia. Then the bureau was formed.
That was Charlie Weinstein was president. They told me not to run.
Oh, no, this was...
And I didn't run, and they wanted to get Charlie Weinstein in, so he got it. He's dead now.
Well, see, this was the bureau itself was formed, and then Dorothy Blanca for a while did something about it. Then in...
No special privilege for women, they were told.
Well, that was later. That's what I wanted to ask you about. See, this first one in 1924, then in 1926, you made a speech at the convention. Shall I read you your whole speech?
Yeah, I'll just see what it is.
Okay, it started out, Hillman says, this was right after it was pretty much at the opening of the convention. The committees were reporting. Okay, so Hillman then says, the chair will now call on Sister Mamie Centura, member of the General Executive Board, to address the convention. This was in Montreal. That was 1926 then.
Yes.
This is you talking now. Brother President, delegates, and fellow workers, we are again in session at an amalgamated convention. We are legislating and making rules that are for the interests of the organization. We know of the events in the past 2 years, but we do not know what is before us. The Amalgamated has gone through storm and sunshine, but even though we do not like these storms at times, we must go through them and meet them when they are forced upon us by our common enemies. This is about the time I think there was the fight with the left faction.
Yeah.
I recall last August in the city of Chicago when we were out in the storm fighting for the life of our organization, for our very existence. I was very happy to see that the women in Chicago were on the battlefield fighting shoulder to shoulder with the men. I left Chicago and went east, and I found the same thing in New York, the same fighting spirit among the women as well as the men for the life of the organization. And it's only in that way that the organization can function, when we know that one needs the other in order to go forward and make progress.
Yes.
So much was said at this convention about New York being the sick man. I don't think that New York has only one sick man. You have many sick men. But the trouble was this. They did not have enough nurses in the clothing industry to come in and try to nurse the sick men. And you got a lot of applause at that point. It sounds like a pretty strong feminist statement, Mamie.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that when the time was so critical and they could not find the right doctor, that they should have looked around for nurses. And if they had found a nurse, she might have graduated and became a doctor. And we don't know, but that she might have wanted to be a manager. And then I am sure, Brother President, the men would have forgotten all mix-ups and disagreements and would have said, here the women want to come in and we are not going to let them. And then they would have all got together and worked together. And everyone applauded again. I have in the past 2 years spent a great deal of time in the Middle West and also worked in the New England states and in the East. And I will say this. Women today are being employed in non-union shops more than at any other time. And if we want our organization to make progress, we will have to give the women a chance to come in. We will have to reckon with them. You know, brothers, that the women are very good fighters and they are loyal to the organization. But women will not fight alone. Therefore, it is of the greatest importance that you should do all you can to encourage the women and give them a chance, not alone for the good of the women, but for the good of all the workers.
Yeah.
You cannot make progress if you are going to permit the women to go into unorganized shops and work for small wages. You cannot keep up your higher standards of wages and maintain what you have unless you see that the women are brought up to the same level.
That's right.
Women are in the same industry, and we have to face that situation. As I recall it, at the Boston Convention, we adopted a resolution for equal rights for women and equal pay for equal work. There are still spots here and there in different localities where that has not been put into effect. At the last convention, we decided to establish a women's department. Such a department was established, but for some reason it has not functioned as well as it was first thought that it would. I still feel there should be a women's department, and we are going to ask for it again and see that it will not fail. We want to be able to know in what cities our women are employed, where they are being exploited by bosses, and where they are working for small wages and trying to tear down your wages. We want to organize the unorganized and bring these various unorganized places up to the high standard of the amalgamated. I will ask you as we return to your respective fields to do your utmost to extend the influence of your organization so that when we meet again in 2 years, from now, we might be able to report a victory in the Middle West, Cleveland, and that we will also have the entire East and the vicinity of New York completely organized.
Right.
This will make us strong and enable us to march forward towards the ultimate goal. Applause. This is from the convention proceedings that I found in the library at my school. But what I wanted to ask you about, Mamie, was that this was a really strong statement, to what I would call a feminist statement. What would you describe it that way?
Yes. Yes, but then when I spoke about it at a length, well, I was told that the Amalgamated doesn't have any special privileges for women and for men, that it's a labor organization and that they take up things not for anybody special, but in general. That was what I was told.
Oh, right after this, you mean? After you'd made the point?
Yeah. They have no special privileges for women.
See, because at the very next meeting, everyone changed their tune. Initially, you know, where you said that you initially thought there should be one, you know, it should be separate.
Yeah. Someone should have the women's local. Then they told me that they don't make no special privileges.
So did you then withdraw your position about it, do you think? Do you recall?
Well, I never heard any more about it after I was told that. And then the convention, and I ran for the General Executive Board. And, of course, as I told you before, you're not recording this, are you? This is not being recorded, what I want to say.
Oh, yes. You want me to turn it off a minute?
Yeah.
Men, do you think that their attitude towards women changed? That's what I wanted to ask you. See, because in 1926, when you made that speech, Hillman didn't speak against the Women's Bureau at the convention. But then in 1928, he made this long speech against it.
Yes.
And I wondered if in that period, if you felt there had been a change in the attitude towards the women, that there had been more acceptance of things like the separate local and a separate department and your being on the General Executive Board.
Well, when I said they didn't, no special privileges for women at all, and nobody else bothered about it, and I was out holding the bag, and whoever I spoke to, well, it's good enough for me, it's good enough for me, it's good enough for me. So then I didn't bother.
Oh, because you know what I found, too, is in the advance, there were a lot of letters. It must have been right after your speech. There were a lot of letters in the advance from women in different cities about how they wanted a different, how they wanted their own, how they wanted a women's department. And it was started by Sarah and the women in 275, I think.
Yeah, but they would never pay attention to Sarah.
Oh, why was that?
I don't know just why. Because Sarah fought like a tiger. And so did the other girls that was with her. What's her name? Friedman? And then Hilda Shapiro, she's dead.
Uh-huh.
Well, and those girls fought like tigers.
So they didn't, when the women got too noisy, they didn't like it.
Have they got a women's local in Chicago now?
When Clara Leon died, apparently they dissolved it.
No, they dissolved it here.
So apparently there were these letters mainly from, did the union look at all of 275 as just being troublemakers? That's the women's local in Chicago.
I don't know whether they did or not. I couldn't speak on Chicago. But here, they never said we were troublemakers, but they said they didn't want to have a difference. And that's what Hillman told me. And I thought to myself, well, if it's good enough for you, you want it that way. And I went to the girls and I told the girls, well, they says, why should we go in with them? Why? And they put up a big howl. The buttonhole makers all made a big howl about it. All made a big howl. Then what happened, which was very bad, where we had the most girls that were in the women's local with Strauss and Brothers, they had liquidated because they had lost a lot of money in the war. The war came to an end sooner than they expected. And they had bought millions of dollars worth of peace goods piled up in their cellar for uniforms. And they paid probably $10 a yard or $12 a yard for that. And after the war, it was worth about $2.50.
This was the First World War.
Yeah. They lost all that money.
Mm-hmm.
So they liquidated, see? And then those girls, everybody went apart and tried to get a job wherever they could.
Oh, so when the women's local here was dissolved, was part of the same thing of Hillman feeling there shouldn't be separate?
Yeah.
Yet in the other cities, like Chicago, they kept theirs and were very strong.
Yeah, they did.
What do you think the difference was there?
Well, I suppose they stop at their. Do they get recognition when they put up anything?
But it seems like the Chicago women really kept fighting, though.
Yeah, they keep on fighting, but here you haven't got that element.
Mm.
And especially now, I don't know what's left of the organization here. So lots of big shops, it's all what you have these here, small contract shops. Half the time people work 2 days a week, 3 days a week, 4 days a week. You know, nothing. It's not a clothing market like it used to be.
So when you would put up a fight about the women, though, you always felt that you didn't get that much support from the other women. Is that it?
I got support from the other, from some women, but that's for most of them. When they were in the local, based in selling hands, and then, oh, why should I worry? Why should I worry? Half the time they would only come to a general meeting, mm-hmm. and they never bothered about any local meeting. So what can you do?
Was there a kind of closeness among the women in, like, who were outspoken in different cities, like yourself and Sarah and Dorothy Belanca, and were you fairly close to each other?
Yeah, well, Dorothy Belanca was close to, you know, to me. She would talk to me, but Dorothy would side with more on the other side.
Oh, because of her husband?
I guess on account of her husband and Sidney Hillman, mm-hmm. and being a national officer, mm. and then that. But when I was in Philadelphia, she came over there, and when I was organizing, and I paid out benefits. I paid about $85,000 benefits. I wasn't one penny short. I was $5 short, and I was so sorry. I didn't know what had happened. And they said, my God, all that money, $5 short, you're going to die about it. Now, no, I said, I'm going to be straight. So I thought of myself, where a girl jumped at the meeting on a chair, and her head foot went through, and she scraped it and all, and I sent it to a doctor. And she didn't give me the receipt. It was $5. So I gave them $5. No, I didn't want anything from them.
Well, did you, like with Sarah?
I, as far as Amalgamate is concerned, I don't say anything. I don't say anything. But I certainly felt hurt because in some of the books at the convention, about on Philadelphia and different places, they have pictures and they have write-ups. And there's no mention. For me, nothing. Nothing at all. Just like if I never existed.
Did you ever raise that with Hillman?
He never was around. He's in different cities. So I could never get a hold of him. And when I spoke to Mrs. Bloomberg, I says, how come that they had all this stuff here in Baltimore, and I'm a Baltimorean, and they made Bloomberg his place here, I'm a Baltimorean. Why didn't they invite me? I worked for Baltimore in the early days. And I was nothing but a kid. I used to go with door to door, and my people didn't like it. I used to get many scolding. But right after dinner, I would go anyway. And I says, how is it that I wasn't there? I said to Miss Bloomberg, I said, I feel very bad about it. She says, well, she says, you ought to be glad they gave you a chance. I says, I like that. I said, somebody gave your husband a chance too. Who gave you a chance? And she says, and furthermore, she says, they never invited my children. They never invited them. So I don't see why you should feel so bad about it. So that's the answer I got. That's the answer I got from Mrs. Bloomberg, who I knew very well, and she knew me very well, and she knew what I'd done. And I got a scholarship from Women in Industry when I worked here in Baltimore, and from Women in Industry. And I went to Hopkins, and I took Economics and Advanced American History. And I had it by Professor Vaughn and what's his name? He was a big socialist. I can't think of his name. He's an outstanding man. And he was good. And I went there, and I did get a lot out of it at the time. I used to work in the office, and I used to go 2-3 hours.
Night?
Yeah. So you see. But none of that. Mm-hmm. None of that.
Did you ever raise it during those early days with any of the men in the union?
You could tell them and tell how far it went. Mm. Everybody for himself.
Did you talk to the other women about it at all?
Yeah, I talked to Miss Bloomberg, and I talked to Dorothy about it, and well, you know how this made me. More is expected out of a woman than out of a man. You said it yourself.
But they just accepted it.
That's all. Never know.
Well, during conventions, would women from different cities get together and talk about it at all, maybe?
Oh, we had a women's meeting. We used to have a women's meeting at the convention. They would tell us what's going on mm-hmm. in their towns and all.
But would they also talk about some of these kinds of things informally or not?
Oh, no. No, they wouldn't inform, just said that to be at the convention, a lot of things were done, and they wouldn't go into detail. And we have to keep our good work up, you know. And I spoke, I told them. And I was the only speaker. I told them, you have to keep up your good work and just go on.
So this was really all just kept pretty much among yourselves then?
Yeah. It wasn't as active, I should say, as I thought it should be.
Mm-hmm.
See, and I got very little bit of help. So, I don't know.
Did you ever ask the other women for help?
Yes, I did. I asked other women for help. When I was assigned to Baltimore Joint Board by Secretary of Treasury, and then my job was, and people would call in for help.
Mm-hmm.
And Ulysses was manager here. He was Italian. And Sarah Barinsky, she goes by the name of Sarah Barron, she was a business agent, or did she work in a shop? I don't know. I think that she worked in a shop. So they would call in for help, and I would send the person on the job, and the person would leave. Then the boss would say, "It is all right, why did he leave?" So you know what they done? They were double-crossing me. Now, and that was Sarah.
Hmm.
And Sarah was the manager, but Ulysses, the diminishes was man, but he had no spunk or nothing. It was Sarah that was running the organization. But what happened to the end, when Ulysses died, and they got Sam Nicella up there, well, I don't think he's the best of person either. I don't go up there, but I don't think about him. I only know from Philadelphia that he was nothing but an ordinary little boy working a shop. But he got there, and they had probably not much here. So she could not dictate to him like she did to him. And she went in a couple places there, and she had a lot of colored people there, and she used to like to play a little politics, you see. And she had a couple of riots there, and then they fired her, the union fired her. And she used to go up that office and sit there, I don't know for how many months, and didn't do nothing. And she didn't want to take her retirement benefits or nothing for a long, long time. And I think somebody talked to her and got her to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
But she never goes up there, and she can't see the sights of them. Well, I don't think that they really did treat her fair, because these things sometimes happen in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
But I know she was very dictatorial, and I think that was a major thing that he probably got rid of her, see?
Mm-hmm.
That's the trouble. Just like if I would have said, no, I'm not going to step out from the General Executive Board. No, I'm going to run. And I knew I would have been accepted. By the general office, I would get my pay. Now, they could have a grudge against me, and they could put me in a place where a dog don't want to even live.
Mm.
See? You've got to have it up here to think what you're doing.
Yeah.
They can't go bust me, but they are there. Now, Sarah speaks to me. She calls me up. She called me a couple of weeks ago, and she... you ought to, if you would have time, she's at the Vactor Center, and she works free down there. She takes the invalid people around, and they get their feet. It's run by the state of Maryland. And every day, and then they have dancing and different things down there. And she's down there, Sarah Barron. She's there every day.
Wow, it's too bad I didn't know before. Mandy, how do you feel about this speech that you made? What did you think of that?
I thought it was a good speech. I thought it was good. Maybe it wasn't just as it should have been, but that was the best that
I thought it was very good.
I couldn't do any more.
Would you like me to make a copy of it and send it to you?
Well, if you would want to, but it'd be all right because I'll keep it.
Okay.
And I think it's very good. And I know that I have said many, many times, it's not only to be in the organization, but you have to assume responsibilities. And the women do accept responsibilities. Once they got a job, they are there. Sometimes, I'm sorry to say, even better than the men.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and I says, and I'm not against the men because I like the men as well as I like the women. And they all laughed when I said that, you know. And not being married, you know. So I like the men as well as I like the women. I said, but women do a very good job.
Did anyone ever,
the women wouldn't be here.
Did anyone ever refer to you as a feminist in those days?
No, never.
When you would make a speech like that, they wouldn't say, she's a feminist?
No.
Did you think of yourself that way at all?
Well, I thought of myself like that. And I thought, well, I don't give a dog on what anybody else thinks. It's my business and not yours. I do what I want to do.
Where do you think some of that fighting for women came from? Was it in your family at all?
My family?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Where do you think you got it?
Oh, you mean fighting for women?
Mm-hmm.
In my family came fighting in general. My father used to belong to the Knights of Columbus years
mm-hmm.
ago. And my father made all these, he belonged to the Union, and he made all dress coats.
You know? Oh, the Knights of Labor?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to make satin, those coattails, frock coats, and tuxedos. And my mother was a very good hand feller, and she used to fell them facings on that when my father took the coats to the store, the man that he made them for, why, he'd say, well, is that soap, Mr. Santoro, or is that pasted? He says, pasted? He says, I've had paste all over that. He says, that's my wife's work. Oh, my, she does wonderful work, wonderful work. Well, my father used to get at that time $15 per coat. But see, it was mostly handmade. So I used to make two coats for the $30. Mm. Well, $30 in those days, when men used to make 10 and 18, was a lot of money. So we always lived mm-hmm. well and dressed well, and we got education, the school and all. So we never had anything
mm-hmm.
like that. But as far as cheating, I want to make something for nothing, like fun. My father had men working for him. He had a shop. And when he made these dress coats, they got good money. And he made good money. He used to make more than just two. When he was himself, he made just got two and a half. But when he had more, he made more. And they all had two men working for him. And he had a nice shop. But then come the time when this custom work ceased. People didn't get measured for
mm-hmm.
Easter, for suits, and for Christmas. Now they buy mostly already made.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, they used to have it measured and pick out the piece goods that they wanted. So when that ceased, well, then it come dull season. Well, them poor people in Weebury, they had to live. So my father used to say, well, I can get work, but I can't get high price. I can get a coat for $3 a piece. And if you want to work, he says, I don't want anything. I'll show you what we get, and
mm-hmm.
and we take out of what we want. So they did. They took them. And my father said, oh, of course, you can't make a bad coat when you know how to make good coats.
Mm-hmm.
So they would pile them up to the siding if you want to make them for that. So then when all of a sudden the season changed, it got warm quick, and my father couldn't make those cheap coats. Went to the better coats. So this man came, he raised hell with my father. And he says, I want my work. He says, I can't help it. I'll make it later, but I can't make it now. I'm not going to give away my good work for the sake of this work. I want my work. I want my bundles. I'm going to get the policeman. My father says, you're going to get the policeman? You want your work? You don't want to wait? All right, well, here's your work. And we lived on another street, a small street. My father took the bundles of clothes one after another to him out of the street.
So that's where you got it.
The man had to get the man, somebody to haul him away. But then he come around and he wanted the cotton. He said he wanted the cotton. My father said, get me from my job. I said, call the police if you don't bother me. So the man went away. You know? Yeah, my father was always a very good man, just a thing, but don't unbutton, see no his face. He ain't gonna work for nobody. No. And he was very much interested in clubs and political movements.
Mm-hmm.
every Sunday.
Was he in the IWW too?
No, Knights of Labor.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went out of existence.
And then they went to the AF, then it became the AFL.
Yes.
Well, how did you get into the Wobblies?
Into the
IWW.
When I come to work in a shop.
Oh, and that shop was organized by them?
Just our department, uh-huh. Hugh Buttonhole Makers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I said, well, I don't want to belong to them. I don't like them. I don't want to belong to them. Because they go on strike, make people go on strike and they go to work. I don't want to belong to them. Well, they said, well, you can't work here. I says, all right. I says, I'll pay you to do so. It was hardly nothing to pay them. Quarter. You paid a quarter and you got nothing. I was.
But so that didn't, they, you weren't really too hot for them then?
Oh, then after that came the...
They were all right.
Mm-hmm. They were all right with me. Oh, yeah, as long as I joined, they were fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't last long.
Yeah.
Only about 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to the AFL.
Oh, and then the, what were they called? United Garment Workers.
United Garment Workers, yeah. And then we went from them and the AFL, then we had to split, mm-hmm. you know.
See, one of the things I was interested in is it seems to me from different women I've met who worked in the shops that there was a group of women like yourself and Sarah who were real fighters for women.
Yeah.
Who I would call today, I would call feminists.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to figure out how many of you there were and how much you talked to each other and got support from each other.
Yeah, we did. We did talk. Yes, indeed. I've talked to a lot of the girls in the shop. A lot of them. I said, don't you think if we would see that we keep our local and put up a fight for it and get and so forth and so on. And then the business, then the other men who had there were in the one union. They said, well, don't listen to her because you can't get nothing. They don't often make no special privileges for that. You're all in the union. That's all that counts.
But do you think that that changed? It seemed like earlier... The union and Hillman, that they were all much more accepting of having these separate women's groups. It seems like there was a shift that happened
Not to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Not to my knowledge, to be truthful with you.
You think they were like that all the time?
Yeah. He listened to the women, and he never was against the women in any respect. But, of course, what can he do? He has an executive board, too.
Yeah. Was Bessie supportive of the women at all or not?
Well, Bessie Hillman?
Hillman. Or did she kind of...
She never said nothing. She was a nice woman, but she never said very much.
Because she was much more instrumental in forming the union than he was in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, she was a nice woman. I like Bessie very, very much. Very, very much. Yes.
But when you would, for instance, speak for the Women's Bureau Department, she didn't support that or do anything?
No, she say, well, maybe in time, but she says, I don't think it, now. She says, after all, you can't make a division between men and women. You can't. You cannot. You have to be solid and strong, be one, and like that, she would say.
Why do you think they were so afraid of that? I mean, it seemed to me, why does... It seemed like that would be such an awful thing, and that there would be a division.
I don't know. Maybe they thought that woman sometime will be the president. But I don't think that she could do a bad job. I think she would be just as good, maybe better. As I told you before, women take responsibilities for everything. I'm that way even today.
Mm-hmm.
I look after things, and I'm glad to see if they're done right. And
yeah.
And why they're done, and if they're not done right, well, you come back here, you fix that. Yes, sir. I give you what you ask, and you got to do your job right.
Still a fighter.
Yeah. I always thought. They tell me that. My own people tell me that. They all tell me that. It's really funny. So, I don't know whether I gave you any help or not. I don't know. I don't think I gave you very much.
No, because you did, because I was really interested in this whole business about the women's department and the women's locals and what the attitudes were about it.
Yeah, well, the attitude of the general women, they would have loved to have it. But the men, some women, and in those days, maybe not these days, but those days, women looked to the men.
Yeah.
They would say, a man can do a better job than a woman, you see? And then they would say, a woman on the job, she say it was a job in the city.
woman loses more time than a man mm-hmm. because physically she's not as strong and stuff like that. And in the union, oh, well, it's all right. The men are all right. I go over to him and he's my chairman and he's all right. And he brought it up. I says, yes, but did you get anything? He said, no, not yet. Well, he's going to take it to the board. Well, then it came where I was. Then I had to fight for it with the men.
Mm-hmm. On the board? What kind of, did you have a lot of disagreements with the men on the board? Or only when it came to women's stuff?
No, I never had no disagreement with the men. No.
Just over the whole separate women's thing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's fine.
Are there other, I mean, you said before that you would call it feminist now. Are there other women in those days that you would also call feminists?
Yes, there were some. And yes, there were. Well, Dorothy got married, and what's her name didn't get married, and Leveson didn't get married. Two of them got married. About two out of the eight.
Mm-hmm.
Eight of us.
Mm-hmm. From the local here?
The group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that some of them didn't even work in the trade, and they were feminists, and they would come over and assist us.
Oh.
Sure.
Oh, like in women's organizations.
Yeah, uh-huh. They must have been in like women's trade union
yeah.
league,
uh-huh.
and them kind of
yeah.
people. See now, when I worked in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and they had a women's trade union league was held at the Guard Hotel, and they had Mrs. Roosevelt there, and we spoke on women in industry and so forth and so on. She sat right next to me, just like you. And I think she was a very, very fine person. And how they make those pictures so homely of her,
yeah.
I think they're crazy. She's not was that homely, the woman. And she had a lot of brains.
Yeah.
She was a wonderful woman. Yes, sir.
And when they think a woman's too smart, they decide they have to make her look ugly.
Yes, sometimes I think. So, I don't know. I think maybe it's a little different now. But in Baltimore here, you don't hear nothing much about the organization. The big shops is all gone. Mm. All what you have is small contract shops. And maybe there's one big shop yet that's here, and that's Haas's. That's Haas's shop. If there's another one, I don't know.
Mm.
There used to be a big clothing market, 1,500 people in one.
Well, all over the country, it's really gone down so much with all the...
Do you think that's the reason the Amalgamated had combined with the other unions?
I suspect so, because all over, I mean, so much of the ILGWU is way down, too, because so much stuff is being made out of the country now.
Yeah. I don't know why I would permit it. I think you should allow them something. I don't believe in starving people anyway. But I do think that you should look out for your people at home.
Yeah.
See?
It's hard, though, you know, when you've got all those other people who make it cheap, and it's really hard to fight it. The only way to fight it is really with international unions, so
yeah.
that people in those countries get better wages.
Yeah.
And then they're not going to run away with the
yeah.
stuff to
have one union. All
yeah. Right. That's yeah. what the IWW wanted, was one big union.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in that maybe 4 months, something like that, when it didn't come, and then it just fired away. So. I think I've been a long time, and I'm 90 years old. I was 90 years old, the 25th of June. And how is Sarah?
She went through a very
bad operation.
Rough year. She had an emergency gallbladder operation.
Oh, mine's out, too.
And she had, they rushed her in. She had a small stroke of some sort. I talked to her right before I left. I thought she was not going to make it for a while, but then... When I saw her last time, she was much better. And she has a niece living with her, but I think that her house has been sold and she's been moving in with her sister. When I talked to her, she thought that the escrow had gone through.
Uh-huh.
And she was doing a little bit better, but she's...
I would write her a note, but I don't have her address.
Oh, I'll write it out for you.